Hello and welcome to our program, Texas Monthly Magazine, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I'm Liz Attamati, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from the Texas Monthly here on OWL Radio. Today's broadcast will include articles on travel and outdoors, being Texan, and food and drink. Travel and Outdoors Gardening by Elena Werfel. Petal Attraction. Add these native plants to your yard now to draw birds and butterflies. In Texas gardening, it's easy to get so caught up in keeping out unruly visitors, deer, squirrels, armadillos, that we sometimes forget our manners when it comes to welcoming guests. Monarch butterflies, for example, have had a rough year, being added to an endangered species list and all, and could use a friendly perch and a fortifying meal during their long migration south. These flame-hued insects, as well as many birds, enjoy native flowering plants which bring color to your gardening while offering nourishment for our winged friends, says Kelly Conrad Simon, urban wildlife biologist with Texas Parks and Wildlife and author of Texas Wildscapes, Gardening for Wildlife. Fall is the ideal time to plant four of her favorite native flowering species, which she describes here. The first plant is the coral honeysuckle. Nearly evergreen and drought-hardy, the vine with the lovely coral-colored flowers and matching berries is a favorite with hummingbirds and songbirds. Shade the roots with shorter plants and give the tops plenty of sun for the best shows. The second is the flame acanthus. It tends to spread a bit and can be aggressive, but the small, fiery orange flowers are nectar powerhouses that can support hummingbirds during the hottest, driest summers. The third plant is Turk's Cap. It has vibrant, red, nectar-rich flowers that attract hummingbirds in summer. Its fall fruits are like tiny apples and are edible for humans, small mammals, and birds. And finally, American Beauty Berry. Its delicate pink flowers in spring give way to clusters of sumptuous purple berries in the fall that many bird species relish. They taste about like how a rose smells, and they make a lovely jelly. Our next article is from the Being Texan section, and it's a letter from by Emily McQuayar. Going to Bat. The state prison in Huntsville wants to tear down an old warehouse where 750,000 Mexican free-tailed bats spend half the year. Locals are demanding that a new home be found for them first. Many a tourist attraction fails to live up to the hype surrounding it, but that's never the case when bats are involved. Stand in the crowd at one of the bat-friendly bridges in either Austin or Houston, or drive a half hour northeast of San Antonio to Bracken Cave, the summer home of more than 15 million Mexican free-tailed bats, the largest bat colony in the world, and you'll inevitably be awed as the winged critters take to the skies for their nighttime hunt. They pour out of their roosts with such grandeur that the scientific term for the event is an emergence. They appear not as a collection of individual creatures, with those leathery wings, hooked thumbs, and adorably big ears, but as a cohesive mass, like an expensive, complicated visual effect out of a Marvel movie. The experience is even more surreal if, rather than watching them beside a cavern or a river crossing, you're right next door to the most infamous prison in the state. The beauty of an emergence is one reason the citizens of Huntsville, an hour north of downtown Houston, are trying to save the bat colony that roosts in an abandoned storage building next door to the Walls Unit, which is the local nickname for the Texas State Penitentiary, and squats right in the middle of town. The warehouse takes up half a city block and was originally built in the 30s to house cotton and other dry goods harvested and produced by prisoners. It's a decrepit carcass of a building with dead trees rising out of its crumbling roof. It's an eyesore, but one that is occasionally stunning thanks to the roughly 750,000 Mexican free-tailed bats that spend their summers there, streaming out of the broken windows every night at dusk. The bats attract both locals and tourists who park their cars next to the 15-foot-tall red brick barricades that give the Walls Unit its name. The bats emerge to a soundtrack that could only be heard in Huntsville. The hum of hundreds of thousands of flapping wings mingles with the roar of the siren, indicating it's time to count the prisoners. Families set up camping chairs a stone's throw from the buildings where the state conducts all its executions, the most in the country since 1982, and more than those in the next six states combined. It's a strange pairing, nature's majesty hand in hand with the depravity of man, and it could all go away if the Texas Department of Criminal Justice ever gets to tear that warehouse down, which it has been trying to do for a decade. The TDCJ has long said the warehouse is hazardous and that it must be safely demolished before it falls apart on its own. Phase one of demolition has already begun. In March of this year, construction workers knocked down the northernmost third of the warehouse before pausing the following month when the bats return on their annual migration. The state intended to finish demolition once the bats left again in the fall. But what the TDCJ may not have anticipated is the growing contingent of impassioned locals determined to keep that from happening. I've lived around this area all my life and have never seen anything in our town draw people together quite like this issue, says Tommy Hoke, one of the locals leading the charge. Hoke, a salesman who attends the Baptist church next to the warehouse, was always aware of the bats, but he became a self-described bat nerd only after he saw that demolition on the warehouse had begun. The more Hoke read about the bats, like how their insect-focused diet saves Walker County farmers an estimated $3 million in annual pesticide costs, the more certain he was about their value to the community, and the more concerned he was about their future. But I was apprehensive, he admits. I'm just a regular guy. I'm not a biologist. What can I do? He took his concerns to Facebook, starting a page called Help Save the Bats in Huntsville. His first post was shared more than 900 times, and his group is currently the larger of two pro-bat Facebook groups in town with more than 1,800 members. The other group is helmed by Dakari Beebe, a Huntsville City Council member and real estate agent. The Huntsville Bat Society now has more than 1,400 members and started a change.org petition to let the prison know some citizens of Huntsville wanted the bats to stay. To date, more than 1,200 people have signed. Beebe tried to get the city council to pass a resolution opposing the TDCJ's plans, but when it didn't generate the votes needed, she kept at it, planning pro-bat happy hours and protests near the county courthouse. As public support grew, Beebe was able to enlist other local governmental officials in the cause, including state representatives Ernest Bales and Kyle Cal, who in turn recruited members of the Walker County Commissioner's Court. By July, those on the city council who had voted against Beebe's earlier resolution started to come around. We had the public, the city council, and the county commissioners all saying, we have to stop this. We can't let them tear the warehouse down, Beebe recalls. In mid-July, the TDCJ agreed to halt the demolition until 2023. TDCJ has been trying to solve this problem for years. Mexican free-tailed bats, our state's official flying mammal, are protected by law. Though the warehouse is on TDCJ property, Texas Parks and Wildlife can fine TDCJ if demolition results in unnecessary loss of bat life. And TPWD intervened when prison officials first began discussing plans to demolish the building in 2012. Years later, the prison took note of the University of Florida's success in expelling bats from its football stadium, an effort spearheaded by Merlin Tuttle, an Austin conservationist known as Texas's Batman. TDCJ officials, who didn't consult with Tuttle, had Huntsville inmates construct artificial bat roofs, or bat hotels, meant to lure the colony out of the warehouse over a period of years. But the expert-provided blueprints were not properly followed, resulting in black bat houses that were scorching in the Texas heat. In the 4 years since they were erected next to the warehouse, the structures, which Hoke and others refer to as bat ovens, have attracted few bats, and the prison has done little to make them more bat-friendly. Spokespeople for both the TDCJ and TPWD insist that the decision to begin demolition earlier in 2022 was not made lightly. The hope was that by tearing down the building in stages, the agencies would encourage the bats to finally move to the artificial roofs, a plan a TDCJ representative says is based on recommendations from experts in the field. The agency has only now agreed to pause that plan to ensure community members and advocates are engaged in the discussion. There's a rumor around town that the prison tried to board up the warehouse one night while the bats were out in hopes that they'd take shelter in the bat hotels. But instead, the bats went to the warden's house down the street and deposited all over his cars. A prison representative adamantly denies this. But if something were to happen in the warehouse, either by planned demolition or disaster, it could be calamitous for the Huntsville community. Bats returning during their springtime migration would likely roost under nearby roof shingles and carports or in stadiums across town, according to Nathan Fuller, a bat expert at TPWD. This would likely increase interactions between humans and bats, which would be fine if we were talking about just a couple dozen bats, rather than hundreds of thousands of newly homeless ones. Now that the TDCJ has given conservationists a bit more time, the real work begins. Earlier last summer, when the pro-bat Facebook groups gained traction, the TDCJ set up a steering committee to explore solutions to the bat problem, with representatives from the prison, the city, and TPWD. In September, they set up a subcommittee charged with bringing specific recommendations by the end of the year. "We're coming around to three alternatives," says Russell Humphrey, one of the five members of the subcommittee. Humphrey, a city council member also serving as deputy mayor, jokes that he's become a batologist in the last few months. The scientific term is chiropterologist. One proposed fix, a conservation-minded group takes ownership of the warehouse, either through purchase or donation, though that would require costly renovations to the decaying structure. Restoring the building may not be a plausible long-term solution anyway. The TPWD chiropterologist Fuller, another member of the subcommittee, says the warehouse isn't currently at maximum capacity, but will get there eventually. The building simply can't hold an infinite number of bats. Another potential solution is to modify the bat houses and make more of them, though Fuller dismisses that option as cost prohibitive. He seems most excited by option three, building another structure nearby that recreates the conditions that attracted bats to the warehouse. He and his team have already begun measuring temperature and airflow and have hired a group that can help them create a precise 3D model of the space using laser imaging. Hoke, the founder of one of the bat-friendly Facebook groups, has consulted Tuttle several times. He says seeing Tuttle's name pop up on his caller ID was akin to what my teenage daughters would be like if Conan Gray called. Hoke believes he's found the ideal solution. He thinks the community should build an artificial bat cave, similar to the one constructed at Johnson City's Wildlife Refuge, Bamberger Ranch Preserve, which now houses a colony of roughly 200,000 bats. He's already heard from landowners interested in donating property just outside town, which would keep the bats as an area tourist attraction, but get them away from downtown and the Walls unit. He's organized meetings with city officials, Tuttle, Bamberger Ranch Executive Director April Sansom, and TPW officials, all of whom seem open to the possibility. But it's a huge and expensive undertaking, and if it's successful, it would be the largest bat relocation project ever. The artificial cave at Bamberger, after all, has a bat population about 1/4 the size of the one in downtown Huntsville, and the Johnson City bats were naturally attracted to it, not transplanted from somewhere else. If you build it, they could come, Fuller clarifies. Fuller stresses that there's never been a conservation project quite like this before. We are not following precedent at all. This is the largest bat colony that I can think of that is in an urban center, in a building that's right in the middle of everything. The bridges in Austin and Houston are different stories because the bats are removed from people over the tops of rivers. This is a building that's right across the street from local businesses, churches, and daycares. He's optimistic, though, now that the subcommittee has been formed. The city's involved, the university's involved, the state agency's involved, he said. Bats are mysterious, magical creatures. Even Fuller, whose life revolves around them, can't explain all of their behaviors. When I ask why a colony settled in that warehouse in the first place, Fuller says, I can make up some hypotheses about why bats are there, but I'll be wrong. It's big, empty, fairly warm and dark. There's ample room for the bats to fly around and plenty of spaces for them to hang out in too. But Texas towns are full of abandoned buildings, and not all of them become the summer homes of vast bat colonies. This one has, and with it comes an ecosystem of hangers-on. The birds of prey that circle overhead during every emergence, grabbing for stragglers with their talons. The stray cats that lounge on rusting windowsills and staircases, waiting for an adolescent bat to plummet from the sky. To witness the emergence is to briefly engage with a whole community of creatures whose lives revolve around the bats, the same bats that most of us pay attention to for only about an hour at dusk for a few months out of the year. One thing Fuller is sure of is that Texas is a good place to be if you're a bat. Out of everywhere I've worked in the country, possibly the world, Texans love their bats more than everyone else. And the final article is Food and Drink, Pat's Pick by Patricia Sharp. French Revolution. San Antonio chef Christopher Cullum's new venue has the soul of a Paris bistro and the heart of a soda fountain. I'm sitting at the counter at Tiny Cullum's Attaboy, trying not to weep while Christopher Cullum, the affable chef and owner, ponders the fate of my omelet. The hollandaise sauce destined to be its crowning glory has broken, and the cook in charge seems on the verge of despair. Cullum looks my way. It's going to be a little while, he says. Yeah, I figured. 10 minutes later, though, the cook is all smiles as she slides a brand new omelet topped with just-made lemony hollandaise onto a plate. I take a bite. The texture is somewhere between scandalous and celestial, a miracle of perfectly set egg and God knows how much butter. My eyes close involuntarily. I have had very few omelets as good as this one, and never one I enjoyed more. The restaurant where this landmark event occurred is not in Paris or Provence. It is in San Antonio, just 2 miles north of the Alamo, in a neighborhood of small businesses and modest homes on a narrow street beset by seemingly eternal road construction. At 44 years old, Cullum, a self-taught chef and San Antonio native, has owned or been involved in several restaurants, including Tucker's Cozy Corner, a lively fried chicken restaurant named Cullen's Atta Girl, which is still going strong, and an earlier burger-oriented version of Attaboy. 5 months old, the present Attaboy merges his dual passions for the Alamo City and French Fair, and is his most ambitious and personal effort to date. As for the name, Cullum's late father, Jim, came up with it some 3 decades ago when he learned that his 15-year-old son wanted to go into the restaurant business. To find Attaboy, you must be alert. The only sign is a sandwich board on the porch of a small converted house. Just inside the door is a deli case filled with enticing offerings. Plump escargots in butter-filled shells, mason jars of creamy chocolate mousse, fat slices of cheesecake. On duty in the open kitchen and ready to take your breakfast or lunch order is Cullum in a soda jerk style hat, plus 3 or 4 cooks who double as servers. Initially, the restaurant offered dinner, and Cullum is hoping to reinstate it when business picks back up after the usual summer slowdown. Scan the menu with your phone, make your choices, and pay. The final tab includes a 20% staff gratuity. Take a seat either at the counter alongside the kitchen or in the cozy dining room. As you wait for your food, perhaps with a classic cocktail, beer, or glass of wine from a list of some 30 choices from California, France, and Germany, admire the decorative touches that enliven the simple space. A splendid antique brass light fixture over the front door, a 1980 map of San Antonio that belonged to the esteemed Texas architect O'Neill Ford. Sit back and enjoy music played discreetly in the background, lively traditional jazz numbers that come from old radio broadcasts that often feature Cullum's father, who was a renowned cornetist. For decades, his band was in regular rotation at venues on the San Antonio Riverwalk. In fact, the brass light over the door was rescued from one of those spots, and on a nearby wall, there's a poster-sized photo of jazz great Louis Armstrong with Cullum's father and grandfather, who was also a musician. If you come in for breakfast, eggs are the draw. Actually, eggs are the star of the menu. We use these huge brown pasture-raised eggs, Cullum tells me. You can have a fine eggs benedict as well as superbly moist scrambled eggs on a buttery slice of toasted brioche with a classy topping such as shaved truffles or perhaps house-made crema with a smidge of caviar. If you want something sweet, you can go for pancakes with real maple syrup, or even better, Attaboy's present-day version of a mid-century American culinary craze, spud nuts. For several decades, this now-defunct national chain dispensed billions of the delightful potato-enriched donuts. Here, the yummy Benet donut hybrids arrive in the form of tidy spheres under a snowfall of powdered sugar. If you show up at lunch, you might want a sandwich. Egg and bacon, egg and cheese, egg and smoked brisket. You may detect a pattern here, or you might want a burger. The latter is a fine choice if you enjoy a simple meat and cheese combo with a tart house sauce. Me, I also want some mayo, lettuce, and tomato. Unfortunately, my burger patty turned out medium well, a sad fate for good ground beef from Peeler Farms. If you're in a particularly good mood or have an unexpected reason to celebrate, maybe you just landed a job, maybe you just quit a job, Cullum's is ready with classic cocktails, bubbles, and itty-bitty fish eggs. My personal choice for indulgent dining at Attaboy, though, is not caviar but an order of those escargots from the deli case, baked until their shells overflow with a compound butter that includes scotch, garlic, and parsley, I also helped my friends wolf down an order of Greek-inspired tarama salada, the classic lemony dip, here made with cured carp roe blended with French bread, lemon, scallions, and olive oil until it's light and fluffy. Cullum says he learned to make it from a woman he knew as Miss Salazar at La Louisiane, then the premier French restaurant in San Antonio. It's basically their recipe. Should you buy some Miracle have room for dessert? There's a fluffy chocolate mousse or a dense New York-style cheesecake based on Cullum's mother's recipe. We kids always got cheesecake on our birthdays. But you'll kick yourself if you don't order the floating islands. Quivering scoops of meringue are dripped on vanilla-scented creme anglaise, hiding a dab of blueberry compote. If clouds were edible, they would be il flottanets. As I walked out the door on my last visit, dabbing blueberry compote from my sleeve, I was in awe of Cullum's proudly contrarian concept. There's no parking lot or even much of a sign. It's counter service, and there's an automatic gratuity. Yet he's serving serious French food, not just casual bistro fare jacked up with a big bar program. It's unconventional, and it's uncompromising. If I lived in San Antonio, I'd show up for that omelet at least once a week. You can find Cullum's Attaboy at 111 Kings Court, San Antonio, currently serving breakfast and lunch Wednesday through Sunday. You have been listening to Texas Monthly on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our broadcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Liz Etemati saying goodbye from Owl Radio.